Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's July 9, 2013, and this is episode 378. On May 4, before I left for Namibia, I released a quick video podcast, episode 371, to walk you through my preparation for the trip. In that video, I said that I'd let you know if anything didn't go according to plan, and in general, everything went really well, but some recent follow-up questions from listener Ken Goldman on Facebook started me thinking that it might be worth me doing a quick roundup to close the loop on this. Ken asked what I left behind, but wish I'd brought, and what I had packed, but discovered that I really just didn't use. And on thinking about this, there were a few things that I did take that I could have left at home, and a few things that I should have taken. So here we go. There were really only two things that I should have taken but didn't, and I found out about this very quickly. I should have taken some medication for an upset stomach and some packets of electrolyte sports drink powder. On the second morning of the trip, I woke up with a bit of an upset stomach that knocked me out of whack for the first 36 hours or so, and I hadn't brought anything for this. The guidance that I received before the trip said that they would have some medical supplies, and as I didn't know what kind of problems I was likely to run into, I only took the things that I knew I might need. But you know, luckily, our guides had some packets of electrolyte rehydration powder, so I dropped one into my water canister and drank that through the first day. The second day of the trip, but the first day that I was feeling a bit peaky. And that really helped to sort me out. But I was lucky that the stomach upset fixed itself in that first day. This could have put me out for a week without medication. So I really needed to have something for that. There weren't that many things that I could have left behind, but on this particular trip, although we were able to shoot plenty of wildlife, it wasn't a wildlife safari, so I could have gotten away without taking the beanbag that I showed you in the video. Again, this is something that we were told we'd need, but didn't really. So the beanbag I bought turned out to be a bit of a waste of money. Also though, because although it's one of the top brands available, my friends over at Guru Gear released their Sabi Sacks, a new type of beanbag that I've since had a chance to try, and they're great. So check out the Sabi Sacks at Guru Gear if you're interested in a beanbag. But you know, I kind of wish I'd not bought the one I did. A, because I didn't use it, and B, because I would have gone for the Guru Gear, Sabi Sack instead if I'd have known about it before. Well, they weren't on the market then, but if I'd have known about that, I probably would have gone for the Sabi Sack. I also found out that most of the places that we stayed at did washing or laundry, and although I'd heard that many places won't wash underwear, this wasn't a problem either. Having said that, though, I only had one lot of washing done while on the photo safari, and I did about three lots of my own washing in the sink in a few of the lodges that we stayed at. This means the washing line that I took got used as well as the washing powder, but you have to be careful with washing powder or detergent. One lodge that we stayed at had a water recycling system that was so finely balanced biologically that we weren't allowed to use any of our own soaps or shampoos to wash with, or, of course, any kind of detergents. The good news is that the soap that they provided for us to wash with actually got my clothes pretty clean and left them smelling nice too, so this wasn't a problem. Also note that washing dries incredibly quickly. I could get back to the lodge at, say, 5 p.m., do a batch of washing and get that hung up by 5:30 p.m. and it would be dry before I went to bed later that evening. The result was, of course, that I probably could have taken less clothes than I did. I took about 12 sets of underwear, which was about right. Having a number of longer days with some evening shoots towards the end of the trip, I didn't have the time or the energy to wash any clothes for that last week or so. So it was nice to have enough underwear so that I didn't have to wash it. Trousers, though, I wore two pairs of lightweight, quick-drying outdoor pants for the majority of the time. And I even went back to jeans, the jeans that I travelled in a few times when the temperature dropped a little. But those three pairs of trousers were enough. I didn't use the fourth pair. I could have gotten away with four quick-drying shirts probably as well, and maybe one for the evenings. You don't have to dress up for the dinners, but it was nice to just, you know, change into something that was a little more appropriate. And I had probably five shirts I would have needed. And note that two of my shirts were long sleeves, and this helped me to keep the mosquitoes away as well as to keep the sun off during the day. The 13% DEET mosquito repellent that I could get here in Japan worked fine too, except for one evening when I went to dinner with a short sleeve shirt on and I was bitten in about five places. Other than this, I was fine. That does lead me to another medical factor though, in that I mentioned I would take some malaria pills that I would use after I contracted malaria, if that was to happen. And I probably should give you some background on that decision, though, as it turns out that this was probably not the best way to do it. Firstly, if you recall my scare with that brain tumor 2 years ago now, you might also remember that just a few days after I left the hospital after my surgery, I was readmitted to hospital for a further 4 days with a quite severe liver infection, almost liver failure. Due to a reaction that I'd had to some of the medication that I'd been put on. Because of this, the doctor that I went to see about my vaccinations for Namibia decided that it would be better to not risk having me take some preventative malaria medication to reduce the risk of me having problems with my liver. That sounded like a plan at the time, but then I learned that once you get malaria, it can take up to 10 years or more for it to work its way out of your system, and some say that you never really get rid of it. If I'd have known this, I might have taken the risk with the preventative medication instead, and that is probably what I'll do for my next trip. Things that went particularly well are the lightweight down jacket and fleece that I took. The fleece was great, as I expected for the dawn shoots before the temperature started to jump up. There were quite a few times when I wore it out of the lodge before sunrise and kept it on for a few hours as the sun started to do its thing. Then I would either pack it away into one of its pockets as it's designed to be packed and put it into a free space in my butterfly bag, or I would just strap it onto the side of the bag, as you can see in this photo of me at Dead Flay, kindly shot by Christine Roberts, a great photographer from Melbourne, Australia, who I've had the pleasure of travelling with a few times now. Thanks again for this, Chris, if you're listening. The fleece was perhaps a little less necessary, as I could have used the down jacket in its place most of the time, but I did prefer to wear the fleece when there was more chance that I'd be roughing it a little. Fleeces are harder to rip than the lightweight down jacket, and I also found myself using the fleece to cover gear on the seat of the vehicle quite often, both for security reasons and to stop it from getting too hot in the midday sun. The lightweight nylon sacks that I used to keep my shirts, trousers and underwear all separate worked really well, as I had to use a soft bag, a large duffel basically. If I hadn't used these sacks, my stuff would have been all over the place inside the bag, and it would have driven me crazy. I got used to what was in which coloured sack over the first few days, And I really liked being able to just reach for the yellow sack for socks, blue sack for a shirt, etc. On security, we did hear of one problem where someone in the same hotel as us got back to his car one night to find a young man stealing his camera gear. They apparently struggled a little and the guy hurt his hand hitting the robber, but he was able to grab hold of him, apprehend him, I guess. But apparently he escaped through the back door of the police station that they took him to. And that kind of makes you wonder if the police are really too concerned about this sort of crime, which is disappointing, but the guy didn't lose anything except for a day of shooting while they got his hand sorted out. The thing to bear in mind is that it would seem as though, you know, if you are traveling in a car, try to make sure that your gear can't be seen from outside. Although we did get the feeling that the robber was probably targeting car parks that he knew photographers used. The good thing about us being with a group like we were with is that we could ask the guides to stay with the vehicles if we thought necessary. But most of the time, we were in places so remote that it just wasn't a concern. Also note that many of the lodges that we stayed in didn't even have locks on the doors. And some of the ones that did have locks had the same key for it, all of the locks. A couple of times I found myself walking into the wrong lodge, wondering why things looked a little bit different from when I left. And Jeremy Woodhouse, our tour leader, actually walked into someone's lodge at one place and found two people in bed after he'd turned on the light. And luckily, they didn't wake up and he made a hasty escape, thanking his lucky stars that he hadn't found them in the middle of something that would have been a little bit more awkward to just walk away from. Ken Goldman also asked if I'd use the GoPros that I packed, and the answer is, oh yes. I was able to find a crossbar clamp in the airport at Hong Kong on my way over, so a number of times I clamped the GoPro to the top of the car while we were on a game drive, and one afternoon I clamped the camera to the bottom of the front bumper and got some pretty neat footage of the rocky ground zipping along as we off-roaded tracking wildlife. This sort of thing does take a little bit of extra time though, so I only did it when it wasn't going to waste anyone else's time, but I still got some nice footage that I'll use in a future video slideshow. Do note though that although I've been very disappointed with the GoPro Hero 3 for the first 5 months that I owned them, they are now working fine. If you listen to TWIP, you might have heard me talking about this, but basically when I bought the two GoPros at the end of last year, ready to use on my Japan Winter Wonderland tours, they would crash every two or three times you started shooting video, and the only way to reset them was to take them out of their waterproof housing, take off the extended battery on the back, and then remove the internal battery. It drove me crazy, and the first two firmware updates didn't really help. Then, on the first few nights of our safari, a firmware update was released, and I was able to very painfully download it over the hotel network. After this third firmware update, the cameras finally started to work pretty much normally. They froze a few more times, which I hope will go away completely in the future, but I can now finally say that I'm happy with my GoPros, and I'm looking forward to not only using them more in the future, but also using some of the footage that I've already got to this point. As for the main camera gear that I took, that all went as well as I expected it to. I had the 1DX and the 5D Mark III with me, as well as the 14mm, 24-70mm, 70-200mm and 300mm lenses, all at f8. I also had with me two 1.4x extenders and a 2x extender. I carry two 1.4x extenders so that I can use one with each camera, and I often actually do this. Some people don't like the 2x extenders because it often doesn't give the greatest image quality with some camera lens combinations, but if you know those combinations, it's still a very workable alternative to carrying longer lenses. For example, the 2x extender Mark III works fine with the 70-200 f2.8 Mark II lens and the original 300mm f2.8 IS lens on the 1DX. But on the 5D Mark III, it gets a little soft. Basically, the 18-megapixel 1DX has larger photodiodes than the 5D Mark III at 22 megapixels, so the lens and extender combination doesn't have to resolve the light to a smaller point to make a sharp image. Because of this, if ever I was going to use the 2x extender, I ensured that I used it with the 1DX and not the 5D Mark III. Images from both cameras are as sharp as tacks with the 1.4x extender on either lens. All of my lenses got plenty of use, and although they got a bit crunchy with the sand and dust, it pretty much worked its way out over the couple of weeks after I got home. I did start to have some trouble with some of the buttons on my 5D Mark III battery grip not working, and I think that might have been from the sand. Note that I wasn't laying the camera down in sand as such. It is just blown around and gets everywhere, however careful you are with your gear. I've sent the battery grip into Canon for fixing and it came back, it's not quite working, so I'm having a bit of a saga at the moment with them. But otherwise, everything gear-wise worked out really well. Oh, and the slightly lighter, really right stuff BH40 ball head that I bought for this trip was excellent too. I love my BH55 and I will continue to use it when weight isn't an issue, but when I have to travel light or perhaps walk a long way with my tripod, I'll be happy to use the BH40 from now on. It was rock solid with everything up to my 300mm lens. One last thing that I should note on my lens selection though is that Canon released their Phantom lens, the 200-400 with the 1.4x extender built in, just as I left for Namibia. It was too late to do anything, but knowing that that lens was out there, boy do I wish I'd had one with me. Although working with the 300mm and extenders was workable, there were times when I wish I'd got the flexibility of that new lens. Anyway, the long and short of it is that when I got back, my local camera store, Map Camera in Shinjuku, had a deal where they promised to pay their top used gear price for some 180 items until September. So I decided it was time to take the plunge. I sold my 24-70, my 300mm f2.8, the 600mm f4, as well as my 135mm f2 lens, which I really wasn't using enough to warrant keeping, and my 1DS Mark III. That all came to about $50 more than the price of the 200-400mm, which is now sitting in my lens cabinet. I did have to pay out some cash to buy a new 24-70 f2.8, the new V2 model, which I've been resisting really basically because it doesn't have IS, but I figured that, you know, I'd get that upgraded while I was at it, so that's new too now. And basically I had to pay for that separately, but all of the stuff that I sold paid for the 200-400, which was nice. Both new lenses are excellent, and I'll be doing a review of at least the 200-400 in the coming weeks once I've had a chance to really take it through its paces. But so far, it's looking every bit as impressive as I'd hoped, if not better. So stay tuned for that. As I came back through Johannesburg Airport, a lady watching people through the check-in queue asked how much my backpack weighed. And I told her straight out it was way over. And I put it on the scales and she confirmed with a huge roll of her eyes and told me that it was more than twice the allowed weight, followed by an announcement that I would need to check the bag. I told her that there was no way that I would check my camera bag, and that I was going to move half the stuff in the bag into my vest pockets. The cool thing here is that she, you know, she knew that I was well within my rights to do this, and walk on the plane with the same amount of weight. So she just told me to ask the clerk at the check-in desk if it was okay to carry the bag on. Unfortunately, I forgot to ask this, but it didn't seem to be a problem. Anyway, I hope that was of some use. Thanks very much to Ken Goldman for asking the questions, and thanks very much to all of you for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google Plus and Twitter, etc., and links to everything that I'm up to are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.